All right, thanks everybody. So we'll take this to for about another hour till 12:30 with the public comment. We'll break for lunch and then return to public comment. I've got my stack of speaker cards here. We're going to be starting with government agencies and tribes, then followed by interested persons. Again, if there's folks out there, it's not too late to get your speaker card in, but I've got a healthy stack here. So let's start with government agencies and tribes. The first card that I have is Ms. Grace Bennett from Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors. I'd like to have her followed by Supervisor Jim Cook.
Hello. Thank you for having us today for our comments, and it's been an interesting morning so far. The TMDL set an unrealistic and unattainable goals for the Klamath River. The structure of the Klamath River is like no other because of the natural nutrient loading that occurs in the Upper Klamath Basin, which feeds algae growth, causes high temperatures, toxicities, organic matter for the rest of the river. The frequent floods change the channels, wash willows from the shorelines, cause erosions in the canyons along the river. This is a natural occurrence and cannot be changed by man. I have attended many of the scoping meetings for the TMDL process. At first, water was the focus of the meetings. Then it was the fish. Now it is dam removal. The dams act as a filter for the toxins that come from the Upper Klamath Lake, the Lost River Canal, and the Klamath Straits drainages. The water that leaves Iron Gate Dam has 31% less nitrogen, 8% less phosphorus, less sediment, and organic matter. This reduction reduces the levels of nutrients for the TMDLs require for the rest of the rivers. The temperature objective is not reasonable. The target for the TMDLs, zero increase of temperatures, is not attainable. The Regional Water Board Basin Plan objective allows for up to 5 Fahrenheit increase. The new target of zero increase alone guarantees that the dams will have to come out, since no reservoir anywhere cannot at least cause a slight increase in water temperature. You cannot expect the waters of Siskiyou County to clean and cool the impaired water that comes from Oregon. The timeline for the KBRA and the KHSA settlements have put an undue influence on the TMDL process and trumped the actual need for a longer TMDL process. If the Water Board would like the natural conditions in the river, those conditions would be much worse if the water from Oregon is allowed to flow unfiltered into California after dam removal. How would the active management learning by doing plan be incorporated in a transparent and collaborative way with TMDL implementations? If the TMDL requirements are not met by the Oregon TMDLs by 2020, will the dams still come out? One of the models that was used in the draft TMDLs, Sparrow, is used on the East Coast and has nothing to compare with the Upper Klamath Lake and the Klamath Basin. Using this model is not compatible with our area and offers no realistic data to be used in the Klamath Basin. In developing the TMDLs, reasonable estimates must be considered, not the levels that are believed necessary to support proposed water quality targets. The state should ensure that all water quality data used for its regulatory process be collected in an unbiased manner and from unbiased sources. The Shasta River is unique to the Klamath River system. Because of its temperatures, nutrients, and soil flows, it is one of the best rearings for the coho. The Scott and Shasta River have their own TMDL plans to improve water quality, and they are working. The implementation plan requires for the Klamath River Basin Agricultural Community to apply for a conditional waiver for waste discharge requirements for all agricultural uses. This will create monitoring costs for temperature, nutrients, and dissolved oxygen. This action is a sneaky way to add more regulations to the existing Scott and Shasta TMDLs without any evidence that the existing TMDLs are not adequate. The farmers, ranchers, miners, and loggers of Siskiyou County have been working on improving their practices for many years and have accomplished many of the things outlined in your regulations. We love this land and wish to continue to use it to produce the products that improve the lives of the rest of us and make our lives better. I have always thought that there should be some sort of a reward or recognition for the work that has already been finished. In conversations with a member of the EPA, I was informed that there is such a program called the Early Compliance Program. This should be brought to the attention of those people that have accomplished the improvements to water quality and quantity that have worked so hard to do those things. There has to be an end to the regulations if we are to balance the use of the land and the water. The land can't just go back to the wilderness. We must be able to work and support our families. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Cook, followed by Rick Costales.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. During the public hearings of the Water Board, the county raised several issues in respect to the process and the integrity of the underlying science in the draft TMDL. Specifically, we still remain concerned that the board staff has interacted behind the scenes with members of tribes, non-governmental agencies and organizations, and others in preparing the draft TMDL that and this influence by the individuals and organizations with a predisposition for dam removal has tainted the TMDL, the entire process. Further, we believe that the participation of the advocate for the Yurok tribe as a member of the board of the developing the TMDL was likewise inappropriate. Although that board member has recused himself and, in fact, is not here today, it appears that while developing the TMDL, there was considerable, and in the opinion of our county, inappropriate exercise of influence by that party. The county has also brought to the board's attention the request for records regarding the interaction between the board's executive director, its staff, and organizations who were not only predisposed to dam removal, but also participating in negotiating the basin agreement and the hydro settlement agreement. As is well known, both those agreements have considerable political force behind them by those who are predisposed to dam removal. Again, the concern is the objectivity and the integrity of the underlying process. The final point raised by the county was that the underlying science utilized to develop the TMDL is still substantially flawed. We believe that those flaws emanate in part from the influence of those individuals with whom the county has expressed concern. And we also have some additional questions and requests. We respectfully request that the board explain how the restoration agreement is the functional equivalent of a TMDL as discussed by board member Corbett. We request that the board make available additional contents of internal discussions, notes, and memorandum regarding the input of members from the board, from the State Water Board, the tribes, and other non-governmental organizations which show or discuss how the TMDLs were developed. We ask if the board agrees with the Stillwater Science January 09 report that proposed a simple release of the sediment behind the dams into the river and how that could possibly be compliant with the proposed TMDL. And will the proposed TMDL protect the sturgeon? What information or studies currently exist that identifies that there will be sufficient water available to maintain the necessary annual flows to support the ability to meet the proposed TMDL? And when you, if you adopt these TMDLs, where do you think this additional water that seems to be needed will come from to support the necessary flows? There is currently no board policy framework to allow for the discharge of sediment-laden water from the dams on the river into the Klamath River at the order of the magnitude anticipated by the settlement agreement. What is the intended approach for the board under the proposed TMDL? Has the board staff developed the proposed TMDL, including exemption or an exception for the large-scale release of sediment from the Klamath dams? If that sediment comes down the river, it will fill up all your cold water refugia, and there seems to be no accounting for that in the TMDL. We believe that this is a very flawed document. We urge that you do not approve the resolutions today. This is a compromise TMDL. It should not be adopted. And in fact, we believe that the TMDL should be remanded back to the EPA so that a correct TMDL can be prepared. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Rick Astolis, followed by Susan Corum. I'd like to ask also for you all speakers to identify themselves when they come up, too, please.
Okay. My name is Rick Astolis. I'm the Natural Resource Policy Specialist for Siskiyou County. And recently, my job came under review by the Board of Supervisors on the basis of limited budgets and how we were going to allocate the money. And I got to appreciate staff for a program like this because of this. Kind of justifies my job, so I still have a job because there's lots of stuff to do. Okay, the board has talked about, two of our board members have talked about the major issues that they have as seen by our county council. I'm going to talk strictly about suction dredge mining. That seems to be the one area of the TMDL where seems to be completely out of balance in terms of not proposing any workable mitigations. The staff is saying that the season being proposed for suction dredging doesn't represent a taking because there's still periods during supposedly you can operate a suction dredge and you know, it's only partial amounts of these claims, and there are still other ways that you can get the gold. That doesn't, I mean, while technically that may be the case, the September 15th cutoff that is being proposed after that, you can't mine because of the salmon being in the river fishing game doesn't allow people to mine after that anyway, and I don't know when they let you back in the river, but I think it's when the river flows completely prohibit any ability to get underwater with those dredges, and that prior operating before April with a suction dredge is impossible. Even at June, the date that you had, that would probably only give a little bit of May to operate in, and that doesn't necessarily always happen. And with regard to the areas of the claims, they're saying that the claims, it doesn't involve much of a taking. They showed that area, Indian Creek and Happy Camp, where it was this big stretch of the river and there was only a portion. I clarified with some of the miners outside and your staff, Ben, about how that was developed, because my perception is that may be under one kind of ownership or management regime by the new 49ers, but that represents a whole bunch of claims. And those claims can always be broken out. And that is, in fact, the case. Those are more than just one claim. That's a whole string of claims. They're owned one. So those takings they actually can be takings of claims, that depending on how big that claim is. And Ben said that he went off of the New 49ers website, and of course they're going to claim all of this stuff, that this is where you can mine, but they're not breaking out the individual claims. So it actually can be a regulation, a regulatory taking. The other question I have, and I asked counsel before this, your counsel and some of your staff, on what the Water Board can regulate relative to these thermal refugia, because it seems like a lot of the stuff referenced in your document isn't associated with water quality or discharge. You know, they're talking about the activity of scaring fish, and they're talking about a lot of other things that's over and above beyond the discharge. And that's one of the comments that our supervisors made in seeking a balance between beneficial uses. They're saying, well, you know, this severe of a ban on suction dredging doesn't seem to be balancing the uses. And the comment that your staff made, which is in appendices, it's O23B, it says the regional board doesn't regulate beneficial uses. It regulates discharges of waste that could affect beneficial uses. But a lot of the complaints and a lot of the things that they're addressing that justifying this ban have to do not so much with discharges, but the activity itself. And I don't understand that. Apparently, that staff feels justified, your council feels justified. And all I can say to this is that it just seems to me that if somebody feels something, you can always find ways to justify it and do it. And it seems that there's a large sentiment that people feel that there is a major impact of this suction dredging in the river. And we're finding ways outside of the, you know, significant science to, you know, basically regulate it and shut it down. And my point is that I'm not saying, and I don't think the miners are saying, that we need to, that there aren't issues. But I think that they can be mitigated. You guys, with figuring out 500 feet up and down from every tributary coming into the river, some it's 3,000 above, some it's 1,500 below, it comes out to a total of about 150,000 feet of the river. And that's 30 miles of the river. And maybe some creeks are closer from one side or the other and come, and maybe there's some overlap. I didn't have a map in front of me. But 30 miles of the river is basically being all suction dredging is banned. And to ban it all, and especially when there may actually be some takings on that, on the basis of the little science we have at this time, it seems you could have, you know, one dredge per claim or certain hours. Those types of things that could mitigate this and serve to be a balance, and rather than having to litigate through this and in order to strike some sort of fairness in this regulation, I'd really like you folks to consider that and maybe make an effort at finding a better balance here. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norton.
Can I just make a comment for 1 minute? For one thing, I thank Siskiyou County representatives for being here today again in this process. Thanks for coming back, Rick. I'm not going to address subject suction dredging specifically. And, in fact, even some of the issues of the KBRA, KHSA process, but I would say a couple things in that I looked at the 364 pages of emails that were put forward by our agency as a disclosure at the request of Siskiyou County Council. And what I saw in my interpretation of that is our staff doing what we asked them to do as a board, which is to try and raise the issue of the TMDL within the dam process, a dam negotiation, where we had very little input along that way. So I think from my perspective, I just want to put it out there that you know, that issue's been raised. I looked at that, and my perspective is that our staff did what we asked them to do. And it was a very limited process. As far as also looking then at the entities that are within this process today. We have had Siskiyou County as being one of the stakeholders in this process, and tribes and some of the other governmental agencies out there are also have standing in this. So I just wanted to raise that point. Well, that this is a process, and I'll just put this out, that this is a process, the TMDL process has happened in the middle of many other processes that are outside of our control, that have been complicating and have had effects and issues, and it's very intertwined, and it has been a long journey down the river to today. So, yes, there are some twists and turns in this thing, but nonetheless, here we are today, looking at a TMDL outside of a dam process and a suction dredge mining process and these other things that are outside of us. So I would say that we are neutral, and this TMDL, in my estimation, is neutral on whether those dams come in or come out. And I think it remains that way today. So that being said, I thank you for your comment. Yeah. Suction dredging, maybe we'll come back to today later. But
well, I do want to clarify the board's comments on the TMDL. The staff has been very engaged with me in terms of helping me understand issues related to the TMDLs with mining and ranching, logging, all those sorts of things. The dam part of things is outside of my purview. I'm not engaged. I'm specifically told not to be involved in it because I'd never get out. That's all I do would be the dam stuff, and there's too many other issues. But I do want to make sure that you don't misconstrue that. In terms the board's comments are regarding the TMDL with regard to the dams. But in terms of the other issues, staff has been very forthcoming and involved with me so that I understood where we had disagreements and where we did that.
Well, and I appreciate that, Rick, and I appreciate you still have a job. You know, from the standpoint that, no, and I mean it from the standpoint that when it comes to the implementation of this thing, you're an important player, as is others. So we'll go from here.
Thank you.
Ms. Corum, followed by Alexis Strauss.
Good morning. I'm Susan Corum. I'm the water quality coordinator for the Creek Tribe, and I actually asked for a little bit extra time today because my boss, the director of natural resources, and one of our fish biologists are both at other meetings up in Klamath Falls for secretarial determination. So I'm kind of doing the testimony of two or three different people. Luckily today, I see in the crowd there's a bunch of people, tribal representation here, so I don't have to pretend that I know anything about the cultural resources, so I'm going to leave that all to you guys, and I thank you guys for being here to make that testimony. I don't know. I have issues with the TMDL, but then I don't. And actually, I got some clarity, and I'm feeling better about it talking to Rick Costellos. Sorry, Rick, to point you out, but we actually just had a nice conversation. And what I'm really looking forward to is getting the implementation plan started. I think we've all been working on this for so many years. I think a lot of us are very tired working with this, and we just want to get to the next point when we can start making a difference and start cleaning up the river. I think it's going to be very important. I'm glad, Rick, you've got your job, too, because I think it's going to be necessary for us all to work together. And I think we're all learning how to do that a little better, and I'm hoping we can keep that energy moving us forward. So as far as the technical, I think it's good. It's solid technical. We've worked on it for years and contributed for years. Actually, I had one of the people I work with when we did the last round of written comments. They said, again, haven't we already told them everything we think? It's like, well, yeah, pretty much. We have commented on this thing a bazillion times now, and okay, this is the last one, luckily, hopefully, we'll say. I'm confident in the technical portion of it. I'm confident in what your guys' staff has done in that part of it. I think it's a good, solid TMDL. I think it's about, 20 times more than it needs to be to know that the river is damaged and we need to heal it and we need to clean it up. So we do support that. We also support your implementation measures for doing the upstream load reductions. I think that's going to be a very necessary component of that. I think a lot of the staff's energy has been put into that and dealing with those pollutions and dealing with how we're going to get that cleaned up. And while that stuff is important, what I'd like to talk today about is addressing what's going on in the Mid-Klamath right now. And those are the things that you know, we have a few issues with that I'd like to talk about, and we really need to work on that because it's going to be a combination of things. We do need to reduce the upstream nutrient loads, and it's going to take a combination of efforts to do that, but we also need to deal with the stuff that's happening on the ground. We still have fish that are going to be swimming and growing and spawning in the middle Klamath, so we need to make that area as healthy as we can now and make sure that the habitat's there for the fish. So I have talked to some of our fish biologists, and again, they would be here today for this testimony, but are deferred at other meetings. So I'd like to talk about the thermal refugia protection policy. I think in a way, this is a self-limiting title. We asked it to be enforced all year round, and it was there's not the literature available to enforce it all year round, that the damage is that lasting or so many things. But these areas are so precious and so delicate, they go beyond just summer refuge. That's not the only important part. Currently, again, it only addresses summer refuge. Let's see. That's a problem with tracking with your notes. Obviously, in the summer, you need cold water to deal with the hot temperatures. The quality of the refuge is defined by things not only temperature, but it's also, you know, you need the correct cover, you need velocity, breaks, you need structure. You know, if you have tribs with an alluvial floodplain, you can get some great hyporheic flow happening that's even colder than your cold tributaries coming out. So these areas are very important, and I'm just trying to kind of paint you a picture of how important these areas are, and it extends beyond just the summertime. So that's why they're good in summertime. Now, in the winter and the spring, why do we need these areas too? Well, smaller streams can be more responsive if you get solar heating. We're starting to get these nice spring days when you warm up. The little smaller tributaries or the backwater pools that are created by these tributaries could be warming up a lot faster than your main stem river. So these areas are important right now because they could be a little bit warmer at times, and that's what the fish need to start growing right now, because right now they're all coming out of their things and getting ready to grow and go play in the ocean. Also, a big deal is fish passage. Now, the fish passage is not just happening in the summertime, and that's when they're serving as like the thermal refuge time. That's why I think that title is a little bit too limiting for the thermal refugee protection policy. The passage is so important. In the fall time, you have the adults are coming in and out of these areas. The tributaries, the mouths of the tributaries need to be intact for the adults to be coming in and out. And the coho are coming up in the wintertime. In the springtime, you have juveniles are out migrating. And going back up and forth, some of the research that we've shown, this is not just anecdotal stuff, we have research showing these fish moving in and out of these tributaries throughout the summer months, throughout the winter months, throughout the spring months, and this was actually requested in the NRC report. They said that there wasn't enough data, you know, to do flows in the summertime for coho, so for the last, I think it's been 4 or 5 years now, we've been looking at this stuff. Our fisheries program in association with USGS, Bureau of Reclamation, Yurok Tribe, a bunch of other agencies have been looking at what the fish are doing all year round. So also what these tributaries can do and why they need to have access to the tributaries is if you get a big flood happening in the summertime, a lot of time, or in this, not the summertime, that would be ridiculous, in the wintertime when you get the big flood happening, the fish can move up into the tributaries. Because these fish, from what the fish biologists tell me, these fish are going to look for their perfect habitat and they're going to do it till they die. And if they don't have access to the perfect habitat, if it's blocked in some way, then they're going to keep trying to find it until they can't look anymore. So an example of what the fish biologists are seeing is Sandy Bar Creek. There's an off-channel pond there that in the summertime is filled by Sandy Bar Creek, and in the wintertime it's a side channel in the Klamath River. This is very important. In the summertime, the fish are holding in it for a thermal refuge, and in the wintertime and the springtime, the fish are growing it. And now that they're doing this pit tagging thing where they're tracking how the fish are moving, the fish that are coming into Sandy Bar Creek into this pond are actually coming in the summertime, and they are holding all the way through fall, winter, and into spring till they want to leave. And this is just one of these habitats that we're talking about. Therefore, these things are critical all year round. They're serving as very important areas for these fish. So what issues we find with dredging is, it's just, again, these are very sensitive areas. You can make the call of whether fish are going to want to swim past dredges or not, but if you're in a creek this wide and you've got a 6-inch dredge or a 4-inch dredge, it's going to be pretty disruptive. More what we're seeing in is it's you're destroying habitat. Right now, some of the tribes and the local watershed groups have a grant with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to actually do habitat enhancement and fish passage enhancement, which means they're going in and they're like, they have their grant to manipulate the stream mouths to make sure that fish can get up and juveniles can come back down. Now, if you have a dredger that comes in here, even if it's only one, they could do damage to that area, and it could very likely not go back to the way it was. Plus, it seems to be kind of contradicting each other. It's like we've got some agencies funding to fix these areas, and people could be coming and destroying them. So it's just, it seems like a conflict there that, you know, we've identified these areas as priorities. Fish and Wildlife Service has, you guys have, yet people could still be there at any time of the year messing with them. So my recommendation is actually in the action plan. On page 10 for number one, I'd like if you guys could change the dates to instead of April 15th to September 15th to all year. And then on page 11 in number 2E, I'd like that to be stricken from the record because we think that that part is pre-decisional and it's not appropriate to put in exemptions for potential point sources at this time. And if you're not going to strike it, at least change shall to might or may and make it not such definitive language. Make it, you know, if there's a potential it could change. You guys want to look that up? You can. So I let some of the people who are here to talk about cultural resources address that thing. Another one of the issues with suction dredge mining is they've been showing, and there's an EPA report that shows that the mercury is taken out of the sediment, can be, and put into the water column, kind of flowered into the water column. And if you're putting mercury into the system where it could bioaccumulate within fish, these very sensitive areas, again, it just seems like not that great of an idea. It would be like, you know, adding copper or something else that's going to inhibit growth on these fish. You don't want to add any more stressors than are already there. Also, I know we're going to talk about ag, and after talking with Rick, I see that this ag waiver that's coming up is going to be a very important component for restoring the Mid-Klamath River, and probably also the Scott and the Shasta, since there's the potential those could be rolled in. Well, I already addressed this at the last workshop, so everybody, most everybody saw except for Carol, but that's okay. Since there are no interim ag requirements, which was our request, I would like to suggest a compromise. We're saying that there might not be an ag waiver in place until 2012. Is there a reason you guys could not direct staff right now to go ahead and start working on this ag waiver, and then with MIN maybe, I don't know, 6 months of EPA adoption of the TMDL, we have the ag waiver in place? It's not like there aren't other ag waivers to look at as a template. We've already had some that had started on the Scott and the Shasta, although not quite adequate. They don't seem to be quite doing the job. So I don't see why we can't, if we're not going to do interim ag requirements, why we can't just step up the schedule. We have stakeholders sitting here who are ready to start working on it today if we needed to. Rick's got money, so he's going to come along for the party too. And, you know, I'm going to be sitting there, and the tribes and the other ag people, I think we all are just very interested in getting this process going. And so that's on page 18 in your action plan for the agricultural activities and non-federal lands. And let me see. So I would just suggest if you'd like to, on that one, changing the timeline to, you know, development by regional board staff shall begin immediately upon adoption of the TMDL and have a waiver in place within 6 months of the federal adoption or something to that effect. So those are my three recommendations, since that's how, I guess, the only way we're going to get stuff changed is coming directly to you guys. So to change the timeline for the suction dredge mining to be banned all year in the refugial areas, to strike on page 11, number 2E, to strike that out or change the wording so it's not so direct, so there can be some wiggle room in that, and to up the schedule as a compromise for the ag waiver. All right, thank you guys very much, and I appreciate you along with this process, too. It's been a rough one.
Thanks, Susan. Alexis Strauss, followed by Joe Dillon.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. I'm Alexis Strauss. I'm director of the Water Division at USEPA, and I'm delighted to be here. It's been a long road since we first began to operate under the requirements of the consent decree, and with your board staff and managers and 17 TMDLs later, here we are. And I'm delighted that we're here. It's a moment that has felt terribly important in all the issues that have been raised and the way that they have been dealt with. And I'm delighted that we are at this point now. I think that the team effort that has been undertaken low these several years of two different EPA regional offices, your folks, has been a model of both by state and by regional cooperation. It's been remarkable, and it's been very meaningful to us and the EPA team that has worked with your folks. I know that there have been various comments submitted over the years about whether the Clean Water Act analysis is technically sound. We've invested very heavily in this and believe it is a reasonable model in a reasonable amount of time, and we think it does an excellent job of meeting both Port of Cologne and Clean Water Act needs to enable the ensuing restoration of beneficial uses. There's always an inherent uncertainty in water quality analyses, whether for TMDLs or through permits and the like, and we believe that we have invested very significantly in what we have brought before you. We have, as a federal agency, obviously tribal trust responsibilities. We have five tribes in the basin, the Yurok, the Karuk, the Hoopa Valley, Quartz Valley, and Rezegini Rancheria, and we've been actively engaged with them in this TMDL process and feel that their participation has shaped the TMDL. We have approved over the last several years hundreds and hundreds of TMDLs in California and in the other states that we oversee. This particular TMDL for the Klamath, the culmination of so much work by Board 1, reflects a very large commitment of resources for analysis, for water quality modeling and monitoring, and for the TMDL and implementation plan development. I think there's a great strength of technical work and scientific work, which is its underpinning. Equally important to what is before you is the adoption of the site-specific dissolved oxygen objectives. It's very important that to us that you adopt both of these, because we cannot move forward without the dissolved oxygen objectives in place. So we very much support what has been put forward and recognize that they are also consistent with the downstream standards we had approved, for example, for Hoopa in February of 2009. We support the approach that your folks have taken and the resulting allocations for temperature, for nutrients, for organic enrichment and low dissolved oxygen, and I urge your adoption of both the TMDL and the dissolved oxygen objectives. If you are able to do so and the State Board is able to hear this matter in August, and if Office of Administrative Law can act promptly and this can come to us by December, it would preclude the need for us to establish this TMDL, which has its own particular advantages and disadvantages. But what we would very much want to do is work with your folks on supporting implementation of the TMDL, specifically to continue to work with Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and our EPA Region 10 office on implementation measures and joint adaptive management. We all know how important load reductions are in Oregon to the success of our efforts here in California. We would continue to work with all the entities to effect the necessary water quality improvements throughout the basin, and we want to continue to provide both technical and financial help on implementation through your tracking and accounting program and working on the ag waiver with you folks. I hope that I'm not in the position of having to adopt this TMDL in December if it should come to that. As you know, when we adopt a TMDL, we do so without the implementation plan that you have before you, and the TMDL takes effect immediately without the benefits of the schedules in an implementation plan. So there are many advantages to you acting at this hearing at this time. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have worked with Kat and her management team and her staff, and on behalf of the folks I have here, Gail Louie and Sue Keidel, we just want to offer our appreciation for this huge effort and urge your adoption. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Dillon. Joe, I've got two cards for you. So, Joe Dillon followed by Joe Dillon.
I wasn't sure if I needed one.
I don't think you need to sit down after this and come back. So.
Okay. I'll wrap it all up in one. My name is Joe Dillon. I'm the Water Quality Coordinator for the Southwest Region of the National Marine Fisheries Service. I'm here to express support for the TMDL and the dissolved oxygen site-specific objective today. As part of my duties with the region, I've been reviewing TMDLs from around this state for 10 years, and I just want to make sure that you hear from this perspective that this TMDL is exceptional in its quality, including the level of modeling and the level of cooperation that has gone into developing it. The extra time granted by the court for this TMDL development was well spent. Regarding dissolved oxygen SSO, Elida and other staff from the regional board have been coordinating with us extensively on the development over the years, as well as the regional proposal that is still somewhere in the system. The predicted dissolved oxygen levels are believed to be the best achievable in the Klamath River system, in the main stem, and we believe that they will lead to the best achievable habitat conditions for salmonids in the main stem. That is fully attained beneficial use conditions. We have also been coordinating with EPA Region 9 staff as the SSO has developed to make sure that the proposal met our needs for the internal consultations we will have to do on the federal side. And for us, that would be under the Endangered Species Act as well as the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act. It does, as the daily minimum of dissolved oxygen is predicted to be 7 parts per million, and that is acceptable for salmonids. And during the vast majority of the year, of course, when the water temperatures are cooler, the dissolved oxygen levels will be higher. I do not anticipate any problems with approving the proposed site-specific objective based upon the best available information before us now. Regarding the TMDL as a whole, we agree with the conservative approach of not allowing temperature increases over the natural conditions. This river system is on the edge of being able to support a large run of salmonids the way it used to be. We believe that the salmonids were probably stressed under the natural conditions, and that is why there's such utilization of thermal refugia and the tributary systems. We believe that the monitoring and adaptive management provisions will allow for the identification and subsequent adjustments to the standards that are passed. And that's very important. It is mentioned numerous times throughout your document, and I expect you will have staff highly engaged in this system for several decades at the very least. The overall scope of the implementation plan for the TMDL is ambitious, but it must be for a task of this magnitude. It properly identifies the parties and the processes that need to be engaged or created, such as the first ag waivers in the North Coast system. It takes steps to protect and restore water quality conditions, such as implementation of the Lost River TMDL, calling for site potential shade, and prohibitions of discharges that are not permitted, etc. There are many other portions of it, and we could discuss it for a long time. It also includes that commitment of staff resources to implement the plan and to consider adaptive management strategies as new information becomes available. I encourage you to approve this TMDL and advance it to the State Water Resources Control Board. Much as was just mentioned by EPA, it is important to remember that if they have to approve it by the end of the year, the implementation plan will not be part of what they approve, and therefore we will lose even more time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. This is what I had in my speaker card list for government agency and tribal representation. We'll move on now to interested parties, and we'll start with Tim Hemstreet from Pacific Corps. That'll be followed by Alan London.
Hi, my name is Tim Hemstreet with Pacific Corps. Before I start my prepared remarks, I'd just like to recognize Regional Board and EPA staff and the tremendous effort they've expended to get the TMDL to the point where it is now. While we still certainly have major disagreements, I guess I'd say, with the TMDL, it does represent a significant effort on their part. And in particular, they've shown great professionalism throughout this process, and I want to commend them on that. Pacific Corps appreciates the opportunity to comment once again before the Regional Board. and the on the Klamath River TMDL. As you're aware, PacifiCorps has reviewed the TMDL drafts in considerable detail, a level of effort that is warranted for such a significant and important water quality program. Indeed, PacifiCorps' written comments on the draft TMDL documents have totaled more than 250 pages of detailed, comprehensive comments. My comments today are not intended to be comprehensive themselves and will only highlight some of the significant issues that PacifiCorps still has with the proposed TMDL. I would refer the board to our extensive comments to capture the suite of PacifiCorps' concerns. In reviewing the responses to PacifiCorps' comments, it is clear that those responses are, by and large, narrowly focused, selective, and perfunctory. Most responses to PacifiCorps' comments lack substance, especially those related to the most critical, bigger-picture concerns with the TMDL, such as its attainability, practicality, and underlying technical soundness. For example, PacifiCorps commented that the TMDL is unachievable because both the nutrient and temperature objectives established by the TMDL cannot feasibly be obtained. See comment A25, K53, comment 4, comment 21, and comment 205. The response to comments document recharacterized this point as contending that the regional board should conduct a use attainability analysis because the dams preclude the attainment of the use. This characterization misses PacifiCorps' point and is misleading. PacifiCorps' concern and point is that the naturally occurring conditions and upstream pollutant loadings cause the targets and allocations established by the TMDL to be unachievable, regardless of the presence or absence of the dams. Thus, the response to comments document did not respond to this important point and focused on an issue that was not raised in PacifiCorps' comments. As PacifiCorps stated in its written comments, the Clean Water Act anticipated situations where water quality standards or a TMDL would not be achievable by providing several processes to address this circumstance. These processes include revising the relevant water quality objectives if those revisions would protect beneficial uses, or conducting a use attainability analysis to remove uses or subcategories of uses that cannot be attained, or establishing new, more refined, and site-specific subcategories that are more reflective of the system. PacifiCorps recommended that any one of these would be a more appropriate course of action than establishing an unachievable TMDL, which is inconsistent with the Clean Water Act and EPA's implementing regulations. Despite PacifiCorps' well-documented concerns with the TMDL, PacifiCorps remains firmly committed to working with the regional board and other stakeholders to enhance the water quality conditions in the Klamath River. Pursuant to the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, PacifiCorps will submit a TMDL implementation plan to the regional board and will work with board staff to plan and implement water quality-related interim measures that will improve water quality conditions in the Klamath River. PacifiCorps' concerns with the TMDL are the CEQA document, remaining modeling issues, and unattainable and unrealistic load allocations, and I'll go into those briefly now. Regarding CEQA, PacifiCorps commented that the substitute environmental document lacked analysis of the reasonably foreseeable environmental impacts associated with dam removal. In its revised SED, the regional board added a discussion of dam removal, and PacifiCorps appreciates that additional detail. However, the CEQA analysis still omits critical information necessary for adequate environmental review and should be recirculated. Even a Tier 1 SED must analyze reasonably foreseeable environmental impacts, alternatives, and mitigation measures of dam removal and other potential compliance methods. The SED incorrectly interprets the requirement to analyze the environmental impacts of reasonably foreseeable methods of compliance to include only those actions which the regional board controls. The SED does not adequately discuss reasonably foreseeable alternative means of compliance with the TMDL. Staff's response that selection of compliance methods is largely in the responsible party's control, while accurate, does not address the requirement that reasonably foreseeable alternative means of compliance must be analyzed at the time of adoption of the SED. Additionally, the responses to comments state that because the regional board cannot control discharges in Oregon, it need not discuss an alternative that load allocations will not be met at state line. CEQA analysis is intended to provide the public with information that allows them to understand the agency's decisions. It does not matter whether the regional board cannot control enforcement of standards in Oregon. PacifiCorps' comment was that CEQA requires a discussion of reasonably foreseeable environmental impacts associated with the TMDL and proposed implementation plan, as well as reasonably foreseeable potential environmental impacts associated with alternative means of compliance. The SED does not comply with these fundamental CEQA requirements. Further, the resolution certifying the SED and adopting the amendment does not include findings required by CEQA to show that the regional board considered alternatives and mitigation measures and to set forth the board's rationale for concluding these alternatives and mitigation measures are feasible and will substantially lessen significant adverse impacts of the amendment. Regarding the modeling of the TMDL, PacifiCorps comments highlighted several substantial issues associated with the modeling performed to support the draft TMDL's analyses and recommended allocations. One issue was the 20% solar reduction in the river models. PacifiCorps submitted extensive comments supported by model simulations using the TMDL model itself that illustrated clear bias resulting from applying a 20% reduction in solar throughout the riverine reaches, but not to the reservoir reaches of the model. This bias results in an underprediction of temperature of over 1 degree centigrade during the summer for the natural conditions, that is, no dams scenario. This results in a corresponding increase in the temperature reductions required of the Klamath Hydroelectric Project. The response to PacifiCorps' comments state that the models are used only for comparative purposes. However, use of the models for even comparative purposes breaks down when differing assumptions are used in comparative scenarios to represent the same exact river reach. Another issue is the boundary conditions at Link River Dam. PacifiCorps identified limitations in formulating the Link River Dam water quality boundary conditions based on the Upper Klamath Lake TMDL. Specifically, the inordinate reduction in organic matter during summer months when organic matter would naturally be higher. The analytical basis and assumptions for this transfer of information from the Upper Klamath Lake model to the Klamath River models is problematic. Finally, there have been late changes to the model. Several model parameters were significantly changed between the June 2009 draft and the December 2009 draft. There was no discussion of recalibration, rather the parameters were simply changed and new graphs inserted into the modeling appendix, Appendix 6. These late changes have not been peer-reviewed and have direct implications on simulated water quality conditions, particularly in the upper basin above state line. Here, the TMDL model predicts water quality conditions that are unattainable given the upper basin hydrology, geohydrology, geology, meteorology, and natural aquatic chemistry. Regarding unattainable load reductions, as indicated in PacifiCorps' written comments, the draft TMDL's dissolved oxygen and nutrient-related allocations and targets are based on management decisions that would require shifting the Upper Klamath Lake River system to an unnaturally lower trophic state. Achieving this unnatural trophic state would require very large nutrient reductions on the order of 90 to 98% of total phosphorus and 65 to 75% of total nitrogen. Nutrient reductions on this order are not achievable, and thus the TMDL is not achievable. PacifiCorps commented that there have been no documented cases in which nutrient load reductions on such a large scale have been achieved elsewhere or even concluded as feasible and achievable for planning and implementation purposes. Indeed, no examples have been provided for a basin of comparable size that is similarly dominated by non-point sources of nutrients. In response, the Regional Board response to comments document admits that, quote, reducing nutrient and organic matter loads, current levels exceed background by several times, to Upper Klamath Lake and the Klamath River presents a difficult and complex management challenge, unquote. And there is a cursory mention of other nutrient reduction programs in large basins. On this important PacifiCorps comment, however, the response to comments completely sidesteps the issue. While there are examples of restoration projects based on nutrient management programs, PacifiCorps' point is that there has been a failure to provide any documented cases in which nutrient load reductions on the scale required in the Klamath River by this TMDL have ever been achieved elsewhere or even considered feasible. Without such actual cases, this TMDL suffers from a lack of credibility because of the enormous and unprecedented reductions required. This lack of realism creates unsupportable expectations regarding water quality conditions that can be achieved in the Klamath River in the future, or even in the absence of any human influence whatsoever. Regarding negative allocations to the Klamath Hydroelectric Project, the TMDL assigns nutrient load reductions to Kopko and Iron Gate reservoirs of over 74,000 pounds of total phosphorus annually and over 1 million pounds of total nitrogen annually, despite the fact that the reservoirs are not a source or load of nutrients and actually reduce nutrients in the river. These nutrient reductions are to be achieved at a location upstream of Kopko Reservoir, outside of PacifiCorps' control. These nutrient reductions, these negative allocations are inappropriate, particularly given that the reservoirs themselves are a net sink of nutrients, as acknowledged in the TMDL. Despite annual nutrient reductions estimated at 8% of total phosphorus and 15% of total nitrogen, the TMDL and the responses to comments document characterizes these nutrient reductions due to reservoir retention as, quote, minimal, minor, and not significant. In a river with severely impaired water quality due to substantial natural and human-derived nutrient loading, total nutrient reductions of up to 15% are actually highly significant. In conclusion, overall, the responses to PacifiCorps' comments resulted in very few substantive revisions or modifications to the TMDL and did not adequately address PacifiCorps' legitimate concerns. The regional board staff did add some language to allow flexible implementation of the reservoir compliance lens allocation and the above COPCO nutrient load allocations, but these load allocations themselves remain unchanged. This is disappointing given the substantial effort by PacifiCorps to provide detailed comments on the TMDL drafts. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. Alan London, followed by a lunch break.
Hello, my name is Alan London. I'm from Aventura, Florida. I'm a miner in Siskiyou County during the mining season. I respectfully request that you reject the section on dissolved oxygen. When they were doing the breakdown, it was showing lower oxygen levels in the summertime, and that was explained because of temperature, higher oxygen in the winter. With exception of a magical portion of the river between Iron Gate Dam and reservation, with no explanation. The only explanation I can think of is that it is the most heavily dredged area of the river. Dredges, by their nature, oxygenate the water by making a loop of material that comes above the surface, re-enters. There's a turning action, and oxygenation occurs. Just to say that it's magic and we don't know how it happens and we're not going to explain it isn't good enough. By limiting the dredging, might actually decrease the oxygen further than what's been recorded. As far as dredging in general, all of the stakeholders here are bound by the 1955 Multiple Use Act, with the exception of dredgers, which we do not fall under. But it seems that all other stakeholders, with the exception of those who wish to harvest fish, are being pushed aside. And that would seem extremely unfair on its face, that if we are a community, and a community of all, that we should not put certain groups above other groups, that it should be managed for all and not just for a select few. Approximately a month ago, I was at a fishing game public action committee where Mr. Tucker, I believe his name, Mr. Tucker from the Karuk tribe, stated that they believe in managing the fish for maximum productivity. And, I wanted to make sure that, it wasn't the let's save the fish for fish, that, they were being altruistic about it. And he said, no, they want more fish in their smokehouses. And that when we're looking at fish, we have to remember that it's the people who are important. It's the people's interaction with the fish, whether it be looking at them, catching them on a fly line, whether it be eating them, whether it's dredgers down underwater looking at them. It's the interaction with the people that is the important part, not the fish themselves. It also looks to me like you're trying to manage this process for potential harm, not for actual harm. That's what State Fish and Game is doing. They said we're in the manage for proven harm and not potential for harm. It would be like buying a car that can go over the speed limit, which I assume all of our cars can go over a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit, and as soon as you buy your car, you receive tickets because your car can bust the speed limit. You don't receive a ticket. You don't receive restriction or fine or anything until you have broken the law. Along with that personal action committee, there was much testimony given on the creation of thermal refugias. There was the creation of refugias by thermal dredgers to allow fish to get out of the current and rest. If dredgers were allowed to dredge at the mouth and below, it would make a deeper place for fish to get out of the current. So not only would it be a thermal refugia, but it would also be a restful refugia as far as not having to swim as hard against the current. The river is a living, breathing thing. Everyone in the world can try to regulate it all they want, but Mother Nature is going to decide where to put the rocks in the sand year after year, and it changes. Just because a stream's coming in doesn't mean that it is an ideal thermal refugia that will provide both cold water and rest. By allowing dredging in those areas, you can try to implement the will of making it an ideal thermal refugia. Without dredging, it's not possible. I've heard reference today of other methods of mining besides suction dredging. It's true, there are. You can have a bucket line dredge. Huge floating platform with basically a crane with a bucket on it. Going through and just digging up huge chunks at a time, not being able to do a very good job of getting the gold that's along the bottom because you can't dig into the bedrock. You can go ahead and use another huge bucket and using a crane, toss it out into the river and then drag it back all the way across. You can go ahead and run a continuous line or one line back and forth with a bucket on it and do the same thing. Those are the options. Dredging is the least invasive. If you want to, you know, take away the least invasive, and as was mentioned earlier by another commenter, go to other methods, that would be horrible in my estimation. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. With that, we'll break for lunch for 1 hour. Just shortly under an hour, we'll reconvene back at 1:30, and we will pick up from there. Thanks.